Go Bucks.
It is 12:05, which means we've officially entered the lunch hour of the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show. And that, as always, is brought to us by Colleague Companies Championship. Check them out July 12th through the 16th at the famous Firestone Country Club. It is fun, family-friendly events for everybody, including free admission for kids and concerts every night. Check them out at colleaguegolf.com. We have our first guest joining us in about 10 minutes, but until then, we have to talk a little Guardians bowling. Yesterday, after a really good weekend, especially on the mound for the Guardians, it was a disappointing performance from one Cal Quantrill. With McKenzie coming back, with Savali coming back. How hot is his spot in the rotation right now?
I mean, I think at this point, he's the odd man out because Tanner Bibee and Logan Allen have been great. Shane Bieber's not going anywhere. He's been good. Not great, but he's been good. And Tristan McKenzie, you know, is their best young starter, at least in terms of proven. So he's not going anywhere. So those four guys are a guarantee. So the last spot in the rotation is between Quantrill and Savali. Now, Savali hasn't pitched very well, and then he's been hurt. So I don't know what the plan is. But Cal Quantrill got absolutely torched yesterday. What do you give him, 7 runs, I think?
7.
I think 7 runs.
I think it was 7.
He got hit up good, though.
Now, he was their third best pitcher last year, and he did a nice job. But last year's last year. He doesn't have much of a track record before last year, and he's been absolutely awful.
Don't do that, because he has some games early.
What's his ERA, Mike?
He has some games.
It's got to be over 5.
Where he was pitching 7 innings, and they was winning.
You know, you can't have 2 good starts and 8 bad ones.
Now, you're right.
His ERA is 5.61.
Yeah, I can't throw a pitcher out there when he's got a 5.61 ERA.
And plus, I think this is a new age. Like, I think pitchers have evolved, like kind of like quarterbacks have evolved. Like, before you would take a guy because you felt like he had commanded the offense or he was a leader or he was doing. But if you don't got the arm to make the throws to get the defense off of you, you're going to be in trouble. And Cal Quantrill is a nice pitcher. He's a nice middle of the road. But the problem is his stuff is not overbearing. And when you it's not overbearing, that means you got to hit spots. You got to hit different positions. And if 1 inch here, 1 inch here, when you're throwing low 90s, that's very hittable.
No, you're 100% right. He's not a hard thrower. He doesn't do anything great.
Them young boys.
He had good command last year. He hasn't had it this year. What did you just put up there? Those stats didn't make any sense.
Which one? Sorry, I was looking at something
else. That graphic that was just up there didn't make it. Said,
which one?
Was that just last night? He gave up 8 runs? I thought it was 7. And it said the final score was 4-2 on that. Whatever that last graphic was.
That's his record. That's Cal Quantrill's record.
Oh, okay.
It makes sense. Don't come at her like that.
All right,
it makes perfect sense.
I mean, I don't give a rat's ass about his record. I am making a request that we ban all records from any stats.
Wow.
Because records are irrelevant for pitchers. Irrelevant, completely meaningless.
Some people say ERA is too.
No, ERA is not.
ERA means everything.
ERA does not mean everything because there are advanced statistics that account for.
What's your favorite pitching statistic, Bull?
ERA plus. I like WHIP. ERA plus is good, and there's another statistic. I can't think of what it's called. There's so many statistics.
If you can't think of what it's called, you can't call it your favorite.
I know. Well, it's not.
The fans care about the record. The fans want to see all this.
There we go.
We can't play cake fans that are being stupid.
Let them know. Earl is a man of the people.
The record's irrelevant. We got to make the fans smarter. We do that by ignoring a win-loss record of a pitcher because it's irrelevant.
So, Class A having the most saves and most blown is irrelevant?
No, that's not. That's saves is different than win-loss record. Those things are relevant and are telling. Like he's, you know, well, it tells a lot about the team that most of their games are close. They don't play a lot of one-sided games. He's not pitched that well, even though he has a lot of saves, because every time they win, they pretty much win by 1 or 2 runs, so he gets an opportunity. But the fact that he has the most blown saves is pretty disturbing. He already has blown more saves this year than he did all of last year.
That I think that's the biggest thing for the Guardians. The telltale signs is when you look at them, they never have easy wins. Like, can you imagine going in there every single game and being like, okay, this is a pressure-packed I got to come in and I got to shut people. You coming in with
a lot of pressure on the pitchers.
It's a lot of pressure.
There's no doubt.
Because you feel like you can't let make a mistake.
Can't
if somebody get a hit and runners on base, you like, dog, that feels like a nightmare. And because you know you can't come back and get that right back. Like my dad was always watching the game the other day. He's like, yeah, it's the ninth inning. They trying to rally up. But it's not. If you're down three, it's not happening.
Right.
For other teams, that's the thing. So I look at it, that puts so much stress on you. And is that a formula that you can reproduce? Like, I don't think you can. I think some of those games you're going to win, like last year, you won a lot of close games.
Yeah.
The next year, if you play in those same games, you can win a lot. You can lose a lot of those same games. So I think that's the most frustrating thing with the Guardians at this point, because you do know that they're going to play a lot of close games, and sometimes it just comes down to a hitter or a miss.
The stat I couldn't think of, by the way, was FIP.
What is that?
Fielding independent pitching. It's very complicated. I'm not going to go down deep in that. But ERA plus and FIP give you a better indication of what the pitcher's ERA should be as opposed to what it is. But I think ERA is still meaningful, but I think it's good to look at these other statistics. And if you look at his advanced statistics, they're pretty much just as bad as his ERA. Like, his FIP's a little better.
I'll be honest. I like baseball. I love numbers.
It's confusing.
FIP,
I know. I couldn't think of what, I couldn't think of it for a second. Yeah, but anyway, so a FIP is the same number as an ERA. His is 490-something, so it's a little better. But it's still really bad. He's been terrible. And I'd probably give him one more shot, although McKenzie is in line to pitch. When Quantrill would pitch, I would give McKenzie one more start in the minors, give Quantrill one more start, and if he stinks, take him out.
This goes to a philosophical question. I was thinking about it.
Deep.
Yeah, I was in my mind. So in the NBA, I think when, you know, we talk about the viability of baseball in the, you know, the popularity of it.
Yeah.
For a lot of people think, you know, for a lot of people that are fringe guys, they just like watching people hit home runs, right? We love people. We love – it's excitement, the pace. We like. So, in the NBA, they made a conscious decision to go to offense. They made goaltending illegal. They gave you a three-point line. They eliminated hand checking and that. Now scoring is up. The NBA is what it is. Has baseball made a conscious effort to make the pitchers the most important people, or did it just evolve that way?
No, I think it just evolved that way. I think if anything, they've tried to do the opposite. I think they want more offense. The pitching is too dominant at times. There's too many strikeouts. I mean, some fans like that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I can appreciate a good pitcher's duel. And personally, I like the NBA better when it was lower scoring and they played more defense. But I'm in the minority, just like people that prefer pitching and defense. Like people, yeah, the majority of fans, especially casual baseball fans, they want to see home runs. You want to see a lot of runs scored. I think, you know, they've messed with the ball over the years, and so we've seen the ball be juiced some years or whatever. Not literally juiced, but just the way it's made, made it a little easier to hit. But if they wanted to make a significant change to help offense, you could move the mound back or lower the mound.
I can't believe what you're saying right now.
What?
I just said yesterday on my podcast that defense wins championship, and you scolded me.
Hey, you were talking about football. We're not talking about football.
We're talking about baseball.
Period. I didn't think you'd be a defensive guy. I thought you just was all
people. But people, we don't like defensive baseball.
I like defense in every sport.
I like defensive baseball, but I like high-scoring games. I like a little of both. But in basketball, I preferred the style of the 80s and 90s, where it was physical, guys beat the crap out of each other.
Why?
I just found that more exciting for me. It was more exciting. I'm definitely in the minority, so I don't think they should mess with
it. It makes it easier for people with less talent to compete. Like, if you think about it, if the Pistons weren't allowed to play that way, they'd never win because they're not as skilled as some of these other people, Jordan and Pippen and guys like that. They had to make it where, hey, I could be physical and still can be. I could be a Sixers team or a Detroit Pistons
what
team.
What about football related? You're a defensive guy.
You mean? Like,
you rather 6-3 than 63-50?
Oh, I love high-scoring football games.
High-scoring football games is where it's at. I'm a defender. But I think they've done a good enough job to
I don't even know who you are.
You'd rather watch a 6-3 game than 35-34?
Yeah. Because you got to play perfect.
You're definitely in the minority
on
that one.
You got to play perfect.
McNuggets.
It is 12:15. I got to remind you guys real quickly that if you're not, just hit that like button. If you can't like it, subscribe to the channel.
It's free.
If you want to do extra, become a member. We appreciate you all. The Lunch Hour is brought to us by College Companies Championship. Check them out, collegegolf.com. And joining us now is Evan Damerill from Locked On Cavs with some potential Jared Allen trade scenarios, because he wasn't a fan
apparently
of some of the
they
ones
were crushing,
we picked the other day.
Apparently on their podcast, they were crushing you, Mike.
I know. I didn't involve any picks in my deals, and we'll see Evan in a second. He could explain his deals. They involve some picks, so it's not apples to apples, but they weren't a fan of some of my trades. And, Evan, let's see what you got then.
By the way, has anybody figured out if we got the bone out of Donovan Mitchell's throat after choking in the playoffs?
Wait, is everybody saying that we should 1,000% trade Jared Allen? Everybody's off to
no,
Jared Allen?
No, I don't think so. You want to trade Jared Allen, Evan? You want to trade him?
No.
What could you
really
get for him?
See, that's a great question, because we talked about Mikey's trade quite a bit, and no disrespect to him. We've made it clear we love him dearly, but if you are the Cavs, the value that you can probably get for a center that doesn't shoot three-pointers right now isn't super high. And if you look at how this team is a defensive-first team, Allen's a big part of that. And the juice just may not be worth the squeeze right now, because teams may not be high on Allen as a player, and the Cavs just may not get a return that they're willing to kind of bite the bullet on. I mean, unless they get like something dramatic. I threw a dramatic trade out there, of course, but I just don't see anything tangible really happening, and it just keeps echoing in the back of my head that Kobe Altman said nothing dramatic is going to change for this team this offseason. There's probably going to be some moves on the margins, and Allen being traded would definitely be a dramatic trade.
I mean, if the Cavs don't make any significant moves, how do we expect them to be significantly better? Just because they're young and they'll grow? I don't know. I'm not feeling good about that. I don't know about you guys.
Oh, no. I think that's delusion. Like, Kobe Altman, when he says that, like I don't understand I don't get why people are not understanding the way these new dudes think, these young athletes is thinking. They've given you the blueprint of how they're going to make this move. If Kawhi Leonard won a championship in Toronto and then left, what do you think Donovan Mitchell is going to do? Like, you have to actually get to the conference finals and win it for him to say, okay, I might think about signing an extension here. But even with that, Kyrie Irving wanted to leave after they won a championship. That's not going down. I don't know what Kobe's thinking about. Am I crazy?
He's naive.
No, I don't think you're crazy necessarily. You do notice one thing when Kobe talks about their approach and just this rebuild in general is they look at guys who want to be in Cleveland long term. Since I love this city, I know you guys do too, but if you were a guy in your early to mid 20s and you had generational wealth on a dotted line and you could pick where you got to live, it's like Miami, Los Angeles, even New York if you wanted to, I think I'd lean towards that if I had the option. And I think that's the beauty and the frustration when it comes with free agency. And you look at teams like Cleveland, they do go get Donovan Mitchell in that trade. And I agree with you, G. Bush. Like, you have to kind of maximize your opportunities here, not just to win now because you made a win now move to get him, but you're also convincing him, hey, Donovan, you expected to be in New York. A lot of us expected you to be in New York. Why don't you just stick in Cleveland for the remainder of your career, even though Cleveland isn't home to you like New York is?
Mayor Bibb's fixing downtown. He's going to be more appealing. Mm.
Yeah. So we brought Evan on, though, to discuss some Jared Allen trades.
Yeah, let's get to these Jared Allen.
And we have four of them. The first one, Evan, looks very similar to one of the ones I presented.
Whoa.
Apart. So I'll let you go. This is the first Mavs trade. You can take it full, Steve. 196. It's a Mavs trade with Jared Allen, with the Cavs getting Tim Hardaway Jr., JaVale McGee, and a first-round pick back.
What was your trade that was equivalent to this?
I just didn't include a first-round pick. I didn't do any picks in mine, so that was the one caveat. So Evans is more realistic in that sense. Evan, you want to explain why this one makes sense?
I take the deal.
So for me, you're getting shooting in Tim Hardaway Jr., which is what you need the most if you're the Cavs, especially at the wing spot. JaVale McGee's a dude that has already played here, was kind of not the coach on the floor because that's disrespectful to what he is as a player, but like was one of those mentors and veterans that the guys just really gravitated to in the locker room, and like it could just be a welcome face. And also probably a decent enough to be like your third or fourth big off the bench. But the real prize here is that first round pick from Dallas, which is 10th overall right now. And if you're Cleveland, you could take a player if you want to develop him, if you want to do that course, or you can trade back in the draft or use that lottery pick for a team like San Antonio, who wants to trade back into the lottery to maybe add to Victor Wembanyama, to maybe go pick from some of the younger players that they have at the wing spot that are more NBA ready and ready to help you contend with Donovan Mitchell on your roster.
The only thing I'm confused is, and I thought you were saying that Mike's trades were two in the Cavs' favor, and this trade
No.
Okay.
It's more so just when he didn't include the draft picks, and we didn't know that he didn't think of including draft picks at the time. We're like, okay, well, if you're doing this simple of a trade with Dallas, you need to pry that first round pick from them, because you need a return to be worth the phone call and the transaction actually happen.
Jared Allen is worth the first round pick.
For as desperate as Dallas is to make Luka happy, I think they'd be willing to pay that price.
Sign it.
And by the way, I if you do get a first round pick, somebody get me Imani Bates on the line. Can we get him?
You know more about basketball than I do. To me, it doesn't make sense that especially if Dallas loses Kyrie,
they will.
Then they're kind of, they got Luka and nothing really. So I can't imagine they would trade their 10th pick when they need to build. Jared Allen has I'm just blown out of proportion how bad Jared was in the playoffs, and maybe teams think more highly of him. I just can't imagine somebody would give up that high a pick for Jared Allen. I don't know. I hope you're right.
I think it is the Luka factor. I think the Kyrie concern is a real thing too. And if you look at how football operates, if the NBA let their free agency period happen before the draft, I think this would make these decisions a lot cleaner for a lot of these teams. Yeah. I think there's a little bit of fun in the chaos too. And maybe there's a handshake deal or a wink, wink, nudge, nudge behind the scenes in the not so legal tampering period that the NBA goes through all the time. So there is that avenue. You have to wonder what Kyrie's going to do, and I don't think anyone knows what Kyrie's going to do. Not even Kyrie knows what he's going to do at this point. But you might want to take that risk just because Dallas hasn't had a clear answer at center. Like, their solution was JaVale McGee at first, and he wasn't even playing. Christian Wood is a sixth man for them, even though he was supposed to be their starting center for a bit. And at least in Jared Allen, and with Luka as the ball handler, like, he's a solid pick-and-roll ball threat. He can give you that defensive presence you need pretty desperately if you're Dallas right now. And for Cleveland, at least, it's more so the question of, hey, if Evan Mobley's three-point shot doesn't develop and you need some type of spacing, you might have to sacrifice it to maximize the potential of what you have between at least Garland, Mitchell, and Mobley, with Allen being that fourth banana in the core four.
All right, let's go to number two, Mike.
The next one's a three-team trade. Evan sent me this. It took me forever to make the graphic, but Evan, I did it because you asked, and we love you here. Let's take it full, Steve. In this trade scenario from Evan, the Cavs get McGee, Reggie Bullock, and Keldon Johnson from the Spurs. The Spurs gets Davis Bertans, Okoro, Sam Merrill, and a first-round pick. And the Mavs get Jared Allen, Devontae Graham, and a 2025 first-round pick.
I don't know half of these people.
Well, Evan, you should know JaVale McGee.
Yeah, they're not going to know
those. Okay. So JaVale McGee, we all know. He is an older, defensive-minded big man who is a rim runner. It can be similar to Robin Lopez, but maybe it's more cost-controlled and you can use him as a trade asset. Reggie Bullock is a big, small forward. He's a better shooter than Hardaway Jr. He's more consistent in terms of Dallas' shooters, and I think that's where you can kind of finesse where you're getting this first-round pick from Dallas, and you just parlay that to San Antonio to get Keldon Johnson, a guy who may not be part of San Antonio's long-term future, but really blossomed as a two-way wing that is really just emphasizes that three-point shooting touch. And he's only 24, 25 years old, I believe. So he fits in nicely with what you're building, and there's still room for him to grow. And then if you're San Antonio, like I said, they're looking to get another lottery pick. And Isaac Okoro is a guy who was starting for a bit, had that knee injury, lost, it looks like, the trust of the coaching staff in the postseason, and has a lot of questions about his shot going forward. You can send him to a situation in San Antonio where they're not expected to be good right away, and they can give him more of that breathing room to develop that he may not have had during his time with Cleveland, just because of just how weird his situation has been. And then for Dallas, Devontae Graham is just that extra ball handler. He's not the same type of player as Kyrie, but maybe that's your insurance policy in the event Kyrie walks. You get that rim-running big man, and then just to kind of make the trade a little bit more palatable, because you're giving up Reggie Bullock. San Antonio then sends you a future first-round pick in 2025 instead. And then Bertans was a very good player for Washington, but he was a contract year guy, just putting up insane numbers, and then signed a pretty lucrative deal, and now he's just a bad contract. So if you're a team like San Antonio, you're willing to eat that cost because you're looking to rebuild and not play for the playoffs right away, and you get a first-round pick in the top 10 out of it. So yeah, it's a little expansive. I appreciate Mikey making that graphic. When I sent it over, I'm like, there's no way he's going to be okay with this, because there were several players on that list. But if you're Cleveland, you're not looking to add a rookie at this point. You're looking to add guys that can complement what you're building with Donovan Mitchell and these guys and give you that shooting and just perimeter defense, just to kind of maximize and play a little bit more of a modern style of basketball.
Mikey, we're running out of time, right? Because we got Chris at 12:30.
Yeah, we got 5 minutes. Right, so the one thing on that. Yeah, we got two more real quick. Evan, I do like the premise of that one. I saw Kelly Eco of The Athletic suggested the Spurs might trade Keldon Johnson to the Rockets for the number 4 pick in a package like that. So Johnson, if they could get him, would be a hell of a fit.
He really good.
Watching
like
the Spurs play.
Keldon Johnson's really good. He could play.
Yeah. He plays the three?
He's a hybrid 2-3, yeah. He's a wing. He's not big, though. He's only 6'3".
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's a point guard.
Go ahead.
All right, the fourth trade. You ready?
Third trade.
Excuse me. Yeah. This is a Cavs-Blazers trade. Evan will take it full, and you can explain this one for the people out there.
This is a pie in the sky scenario, but you're trying to get that top 3 pick and then really play with house money at that point. And Portland is a team that is also in a similar vein to Dallas, where they don't want to embrace similar in the fact where they want to appease Damian Lillard and keep Dame there long term and build around him. And it's pretty well known in the ether at this point that Portland's looking to trade this pick and get some type of return. And this can always expand into a bigger trade as well. But you send Allen to Portland along with Isaac Okoro just as a bit of a sweetener. But then you take back Yusuf Nurkic, who is a little bit more oft injured and banged up than Allen, but provides you some of the similar defensive upside. Nasir Little is a guy who hasn't fleshed out much since coming out of North Carolina a few years ago, but is a wing player that provides you 3-point shooting and defense. He can play small ball 4, but mostly is a 2-3 player. And then, again, you get that third overall pick. And if you're Cleveland, I couldn't think of what would you do with the third overall pick in the draft. Yeah. But if you're like looking at this and say, okay, we'll take the best wing player available, and maybe that's Brandon Miller out of Alabama if you're not concerned about his legal issues off the court. But like, Miller's a guy that has that prototypical size as a small forward, has a ton of upside, and I think you're more comfortable if you're Cleveland saying, okay, we're willing to take a swing on a rookie because we
know he can contribute right away. Hold on, because we're running out of time and I got to get to this. There is no way on earth the Blazers would trade the third overall pick for Jared Allen.
That's
come
what
on
I
now.
See. I was like,
they can get better deal than that.
If the Blazers
took
that trade, Dave Lillard go request the trade that in
that sounds
15
crazy
minutes
to me.
Later.
All right, let's see the fourth one though, Mike. Come on.
We got one more. This is a Thunder deal. Evan, I'll let you walk through it again.
Sure. It's similar enough where Oklahoma City has Chet Holmgren coming off an injury. He's going to probably play the 4 for them, even though he's just so massive as a player, just because he's so frail. You call up OKC and say, listen, we could get this 12th overall pick from you, but we'd like to get Kenrick Williams and maybe Jalen Williams as well. The Jalen Williams thing might be a bit of a reach, but you're looking to get Williams, who's a 3-4 player, provides you shooting and perimeter defense, and then you get the 12th overall pick in the draft. And then again, you can parlay that into another trade, or you can use that to grab a player that maybe you think can contribute right away.
All right. I don't know, man. Teams don't like giving up lottery picks. I don't understand why any team would give up a lottery pick and players for Jared Allen. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
In the case of like Oklahoma City, they have, oh my gosh, almost 30 picks over the next 4 years. So they got to spend them at some point.
But you don't think they could get something better than the 12th pick than Jared Allen?
I'm not sure, just because there is a pretty deep drop-off after about the top 5, maybe 6 guys in this draft class. And just Portland is such a weird case where they fell off and they want to keep Dame happy and not trade Dame, that they're probably willing to talk shop with a lot of teams just to move that pick to, again, they're just such an oddly run organization where they just keep moving in this vicious circle where they're like, okay, we're just going to do these things to make Dame happy, but it's just the same formula, just a bunch of different faces.
Yeah. All right, Evan.
Bottom line here, and I think Evan and I ran into the same thing when we look at this, Jared Allen means more to the Cavs than he probably means to anyone else. And at the end of the day, I'd be surprised at the end of the day if Jared Allen's not in a Cleveland Cavaliers uniform next season.
Sure. Well, I think we'd make any of those trades. I mean,
I just don't think
any of those teams would make those trades.
If you somehow subliminally put that in the universe and we get it, shout out to you.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Evan.
Thanks, guys. Take
care. See you later.
Evan, we appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. Fake trades are so tough because you
– Yeah.
No one really knows how it's valued.
But, I mean, I said it with him. There's no way Portland's trading the third overall pick for Jared Allen.
Absolutely.
No way.
Isaac Okoro or Jared Allen? No.
I don't even think teams would trade those 10th and 12th
picks. If that was the case, I'd run it over there right now.
I'm going to be honest with you. After watching the playoffs, yeah. I have a different perspective on the whole roster. Like, there's – Like, I'm watching.
We're getting
this.
Into it tomorrow.
Yeah,
dude.
Don't
spill the beans too much.
These guys
should be here any sec.
You ain't getting no money for that.
They ain't it, huh?
I hope Evan's right, and I hope we're wrong because, I mean, I'd make any of those trades in a second.
Oh, they start over what?
A lottery pick for Jared Allen?
That's
one thing with the number three pick. Like, there were rumors that Portland may package a three pick and someone for Jaylen Brown. Like, that's the kind of fish they're going after for the third pick in a top four heavy draft.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I get it. If Portland wants to trade the pick, okay. There's no way they can't get something better than Jared Allen for that pick.
Like I say, if that was the case, the Cavs need to take that yesterday.
I mean,
you can't beat that with a bat.
And that trade with Oklahoma City, they were getting a good player. What's his name? Jalen Williams, right?
That's the bad Jalen Williams, though.
Oh,
so they
yeah.
had two. Bad so they Jaylen. Were both solid. One was first team all rookie. The other one was just solid. That was the solid Jalen Williams.
So
the one with an I is the average one. The
so
one
you're getting
e,
a solid player and
two solid players
and the 10th pick in the draft. Two solid players in the 10th pick in the draft for a guy who played like an absolute bum in the playoffs.
And fake it's trades not are like, tough, man. Fake trades are tough.
And let me tell you something. It's not like Jared Allen was in the playoffs for the first time and played like a bum.
Yeah.
He'd been in the playoffs before.
Yeah.
Jared Allen played gutless basketball in the playoffs.
I mean, he got
– I don't know why any – honestly, I'm not – maybe I'm crazy. And, again, Evan's a Cavs guy, so I could be lost in the soup, but
– Well, maybe he was overvaluing him. Maybe I was undervaluing him.
Somewhere
in the middle is probably where the truth lies.
I guess.
On what his potential value could be. But we do know this.
We have Chris Rose.
He's setting up right now. We'll bring Chris on in one sec. But – in the process of looking at all the potential Allen deals,
yeah,
it's kind of like the situation where with Nick Chubb, where in theory he's more valuable to the Browns than he would be to another team. Jared Allen is more valuable, and the return on investment for him is probably not going to make the Cavs significantly better.
That was just a slap in the face to Nick Chubb, what you just said.
But it was just, I'm not saying they're equal. I'm just saying the premise of that whole discussion.
Okay, I guess I agree with that. I don't buy the Jared Allen – I agree that they're more valuable to their teams than to other teams in the trade.
End of story. That's what I said.
However, Nick Chubb is way more valuable to the Browns than Jared Allen.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that. I just meant that they're more valuable to their current team than you would
yeah,
be.
Yeah,
I'm unhappy with that comparison because Nick Chubb's a potential Hall of Famer.
Jared Allen is a high-level role guy. He's a high-level role player.
He is in reality. Now, he did make one All-Star game. That was an anomaly. It'll never happen.
So did Tyrone Hill.
Tyler Hero made an All-Star
game. No, Tyrone Hill.
Who is that?
Tyrone Hill.
Never heard of him.
Tyrone Hill used to play for the Cavs. He made him one All-Star. Mm. He was like, oh, we got Tyrone Hill.
Never heard of him.
Yeah, I heard of Grant
we got Chris?
Hill. Not
Chris
Tyrone.
Chris Rose is with us. Let's see where Chris is. Are we going to see Chris?
Yeah, we do have Chris. What's up,
there
Chris?
There he is.
There
Hi,
is.
Chris.
Hi, guys.
I love John Boy, man. I like that John Boy jersey you got behind you.
Thank you. Yeah. Did somebody say I don't remember Tyrone Hill?
No.
Yes. Tyvus. He's young, though.
He's
never heard of Tyrone Hill.
Who is he? I'm missing out.
So Tyrone Hill was a decent big man. He did make an All-Star team for us.
What year was this?
He played on the Sixers NBA Finals team Iverson. And went to Xavier. Good, solid player. Good dude. I think I remember reading a great story about him one time. Somebody asked about, like, his one-year anniversary was coming up or something like that. And he had to turn to a PR director.
Chris is on his phone, so if he gets a text, I think he's going to pop out for a sec, which is unfortunate downside of VMix. As soon as Chris pops back in, we'll bring him back.
If you get a text,
Tyrone
tell
Hill.
Him to put it on do not disturb.
See, he played on, they had back then Tyrone Hill, Bob Sir, Wesley Person was on that hill. Michael Cage was on that.
Michael Cage
was on that roster.
Ooh, Supersonic.
Michael Cage.
Ricky Davis.
We got him back.
Who was the legend Ricky Davis?
Well, we got to hear the story. Hold on. I want Chris to tell the story. No?
Yeah, just that I think he had to check with the PR director as to when his wedding anniversary was.
Oh.
That's always kind of a bad sign.
Wow.
That's funny. No, Chris, we were talking about, like, potential Jarrett. We just had a guy who does a Cavs podcast, does a good job with that. And he's suggesting all these Cavs trades where the Cavs are trading Jarrett Allen for, like, a lottery pick. In my mind, why would any team give up a lottery pick for Jarrett Allen? Am I being too overreactionary to how he played in the playoffs? Do you think they can get a lottery pick for him?
Well, I don't think it's so much how he played in the playoffs, but rather where the sport is.
Right.
Like, I love Jared Allen. I love his personality. Defensively, during the regular season, he is an enormous help. But I think when you get to the playoffs, it's a different animal out there, right? Offensively, he's not Bam Adebayo, right?
Nope.
And he's definitely not Joker. Nobody is. Other than that, what 7-footer-ish type guy had a huge impact on the playoffs? They just don't. So at this point, I understand why we paid him $100 million at the time we did. I love who he is and what he gives the Cavs during the regular season. But if this team's goal is to start winning playoff rounds – plural, then they're going to have to look to move him. But I don't see teams giving up a lottery pick for him either, unless there's a lot more involved in the deal.
Right.
And maybe that's possible.
Well, you know, Chris, you know, after the playoffs happen and I'm watching the Cavs and they got Donovan Mitchell and I'm looking at it, I'm like, man, we kind of far away. And then I look at the Guardians and I say, okay, well, you know, I don't know if we can win this way, playing small ball, not being able to, you know, hit for power. And then I guess I look at the Browns and say, well, it could be a chance that either the coach signs an extension and we love him, or after 6 games, we're like, oh, we're going to start over with this. I mean, who is the closest as constituted that you would say between the 3 teams that is the closest to winning a championship?
I think the Browns are the closest to winning it all, because if Deshaun gets back to what he was when they traded for him, at least, you know, perceived to be that way, then they're going to be in a lot of games this year. And I know that the AFC is really, really tough, but there is a lot of talent on this team. And I actually liked the offseason that Andrew Berry had. I thought a lot of his draft picks, trade, and free agent signings made sense for this roster. We're still either probably the 3rd or 4th best team in this division going in, right? You'd have to give the Bengals and the Ravens, I think, a leg up, but that doesn't mean that the Browns can't win this division, right? I mean, look at where they finished compared to these other teams. It wasn't miles behind, and even though they were a last place team, they weren't a last place team like some of these other squads that were out there.
Yeah.
So they, I think they're the closest. The Guardians, I think, have the best shot at the playoffs, as odd as that sounds. Well, I mean, outside, listen, the Cavs are a playoff team, but it feels like they've got a little bit of a ways to go before they're true NBA title contenders.
Christy, go ahead. Doug.
Chris, I'll just cut straight to the point. D-Hop or DPJ?
I don't know. I mean, I've always loved DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, I think that he's got the stickiest hand of anybody in the NFL. But, yeah, if I had to guess, I would guess that this is DPJ's last year here. I just think that at some point you're not going to be able to pay everybody in the way that they drafted, that it probably makes sense. But I think both those guys would be one-year players. I know that they're getting more money freed up tomorrow when John Johnson officially comes off the book, but I just don't know if financially if they can reach what he's looking to get out there. But then again, I don't know how many teams can. of serious contenders. Mm-hmm. That didn't really answer your question. He's obviously, you know, when he's right, which has been a little bit now, he's one of the five best receivers in the game. And I don't think there's a question about it. So even though he's 31, about to be 31, he still can contribute. I mean, so why wouldn't you take your shot at him?
Yeah, I think it makes absolute sense. Chris, I want to get back to the Guardians. We talked about this before when Savali and McKenzie about to both come off the injured list. And we know, I mean, Logan Allen and Tanner Bibee have done a great job. We know Bieber's in the rotation. Mm-hmm. We know McKenzie's in the rotation. So Quantrill's been pretty bad. Obviously, he was awful yesterday. His ERA's now up over 5. Savali's been up and down in his Guardians career. When those two come back, if everybody else is still healthy, who are you booting for the rotation? Is it Savali or is it Quantrill?
Well, I think Savali's got to work his way back, right? He hasn't been great since he came back at the end of last season.
Right.
So he needs to show that he's healthy and dependable and all that sort of stuff. But one thing that Cal has been is he's been there every 5 days, and that's a big deal for a starting pitcher. I have said this several times that I really think this is the summer that we trade Shane Bieber. And it's not because I don't like Bieber. I love him. I think he's done amazing things. And even with his velocity drop, the fact that he still is in just about every start that he goes out there, gives you 7 innings, that's huge. But I just don't see him getting an extension here. I think that you could get a lot for him coming up at this trade deadline. I think that they could get some serious power back in that lineup. And I think that they could actually kind of turn this thing around on the fly. Bibee and Allen and Gavin Williams, who's the next one in line, like that, there are teams that would drool to have one of those guys.
No doubt.
We've got 3 of them. So because of the way that we operate, you have to sometimes deal from a position of strength. The fact that we never hit home runs, guys. It is so hard to string together against the type of velocity that's out there. 3 or 4 hits in an inning to get multiple runs instead of just one swing of the bat. It's like they're fighting with one hand tied behind their back, and they know that that's the way it is right now.
Chris, I couldn't agree with you more. Now is the time not only to trade Bieber, but to trade him for some proven talent. Like, no more of these trades for minor leaguers. They've got a million minor leaguers. They've got a ton of talent. I think, I was talking about this yesterday, the Cardinals are a perfect trade partner for the Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
They are loaded with outfielders, right? I mean, Walker, they sent him back to the minors, but Tyler O'Neill, Dylan Carlson, on and on and on. They got all these outfielders. They need a pitcher. And the Guardians need some hitters with some power. I think a Bieber, you know, as the crux of it being Bieber for Tyler O'Neill or Dylan or whoever, somebody, maybe 2 guys from that outfield mix, I think they're good trade partners. I hope that they can get something done like that, and I hope that they just don't trade for a bunch of A-ballers.
Yeah, the problem is a Tyler O'Neill or, you know, Alec Burleson, are those guys going to put you over the top? That's the question, whereas if you get a top-notch prospect who's right on the cusp of that, Baltimore's got a couple of kids. Like, I think that today's start for Shane Bieber is huge for Guardians fans. They're going to really want to watch this because if he shines against that team, they're a team that feels like offensively and bullpen-wise that they could get to the World Series. I think they know starting pitching-wise they're a little bit short. So if Shane Bieber's available,
yeah,
and you dip into the best farm system, I'm talking about guys that are right there that could be playing in Cleveland right now. That's something you have to look at because I don't know if those Cardinals guys are the ones that put you over the top eventually somewhere down the line.
I get what you're saying, and you're saying, okay, well, we're not trading for A-ballers, we're trading for guys that are ready to come up in the big leagues right now. Speaking of which, Bo Naylor, I mean, he seems to be ready to come up to the big leagues right mm-hmm. now. They've been aggressive, more aggressive the last couple of years with calling guys up, but for some reason with him, I know he was up for the doubleheader, but they haven't called him up. They're getting no production out of catcher right now. Are you surprised they haven't brought him up yet?
The only thing that we don't know is the greatest unknown, and that is how a guy calls a game and all that sort of stuff. Just that's a big deal. Like, I can't tell you what catchers do. I've been around them for 30 years at the big league level, but they're a lot like offensive linemen. I know when they suck.
Right.
I just don't know when they're great.
Right.
And that is a huge deal. Like, we would see the four at-bats a night out of Bo Naylor and be like, yeah, dude is ready. But if he's not, then it could send your entire pitching staff the wrong direction. And that's the only way I'll defend the Guardians a little bit, one, is because I don't know. And it's the most mysterious position on the team. But, yeah, I can't watch Cam Gallagher and Mike Zunino hit 187 and balls are bouncing all over the place. And I'm like, I call my buddy Hedgie. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Can we borrow your ball blocking skills? I know that sounds weird, but you understand what I'm getting at. So,
yeah. Last thing on the Guardians here, before we hit on a couple other things, Chris. But I think the trade deadline. Now, obviously, we got a long way to go. We got 2 months. But right now, I mean, the only two teams in all of baseball that are completely out of it are Kansas City and Oakland. Oakland's got nobody to trade. They don't have a single player, right? Ruiz is really their only good player, and they're not trading him. Kansas City, they got Aroldis Chapman, a couple guys in their bullpen, but they've really got not much to trade either. Maybe Salvador Perez, they trade him? I don't know, but the rest of their hitters that are good are all young. So there's almost like this is a seller's market, but I don't know how many sellers there are. Again, things may change. Maybe the White Sox and the Cubs fall out of it, and they have some pieces to change. The trade, but the central divisions are so awful that I don't know that the Cubs or White Sox will completely fall out of it.
You got 2 months still.
Yeah, that's true.
I know weird stuff happens in this sport in 7 weeks. It just does.
Fair
like
enough.
Teams can lose 9 out of 11 and all of a sudden they're 7 games back instead of being 2. And then you look at your team and it's very different. So I think you just have to kind of let it play out a little bit more. But as of right now, it doesn't feel like there's a ton out there.
Right.
Whereas I think with starting pitchers, there's a few guys out there. There's a bunch of guys who are going to be free agents that I think will be available, you know. And then I think a guy like Bieber is kind of in his own category. You know, still in his 20s, still with 2 years of control left, and still at the top of his game. So I think it's going to be a fascinating couple of months. It's just I'm having a hard time watching this team right now with their inability to hit the ball to the gaps or over the wall. I'm rooting hard for them. I'm going to see them in person in San Diego in 2 weeks. But, man, it's just driving me up a wall.
Mm. It's tough to watch.
Chris, we've seen on the NBA side of things, a lot of these former NBA champion teams have let their coach go. Do you think J.B. Bickerstaff is the guy? Are you comfortable with him, or do you think they should explore looking at another coach?
So here's where I sit with that. The Cavs have played hard for him the last 2 years, right? And that is a big deal. The problem is that they play really hard and they play great defense during the season where everybody goes, when they get to the playoffs, they're like, well, Cleveland is number one in defensive this and that and the other thing. That's in part because the rest of the teams don't give a crap. They just don't care. They're playing for the fourth time in 6 nights, and they're like, whatever. And defense was horrible around the league this year. But then when guys are playing for something, when they get to the playoffs, they're like, it's time to crank it up. So then everybody gets to Cleveland's level defensively. We don't get any easy shots. And I saw Miami draw up a play out of a timeout the other day where they got a crystal clear look. And I feel like the last time that happened with the Cavs, Ty Lue was designing plays.
Yeah.
Like every time we come out of a timeout, boom, we'd score. I was like, that guy knows how to design plays. JB and his staff have got to get better at the basketball side of this stuff. They just have to, because every shot in New York felt like we were in labor. Like it was impossible. There was not one shot that was easy. Not one shot. And that is, to me, that's partially on the coaching staff. So they've got the part down where I think the guys believe in the staff, but we don't got to grow as a staff when it comes to basketball wise, because we're getting, I feel like we're getting left in the dust.
You know, Chris, a little along the lines of kind of what Tyvus is saying about JB Bickerstaff, and I think maybe this is a more question about Kobe Altman and the direction of the Cavs organization. So you give up the picks to Utah to get Donovan Mitchell, right? Kobe Altman said, you know, they won 51 games. That's a big market in the league. We're not going to make any sweeping changes. But when you look at Donovan Mitchell's contract, I think he has two more years on his deal. And you know what that means. We should know. We've been through Kyrie. We've been through LeBron. When you got 2 years left on your deal, that means you got 1 year, really, because you're going to have to start thinking about whether or not he's going to sign the extension. When Kobe Altman says that, hey, we're not going to make any sweeping changes here, and I'm watching these other teams in the playoffs, and like you said, I'm watching Spoelstra with a play-in team go on the road to Boston after a heartbreaking loss and win that game, you look at some of the teams like Atlanta, you look at teams like Philadelphia. I'm looking at the Cavs, and I'm like, well, they might not be better than any of those teams. And if you're not going to make any sweeping changes, how do they go about getting better?
Well, I think to say you're not going to make any sweeping changes and to not make any sweeping changes are two totally different things. He doesn't have to tell us the truth. Yeah. I mean, if so, he'd probably be the first sports executive in history to tell us the truth.
Fair.
Right. So I would like to see some changes. And I think that if there aren't changes, then the Cavs will get left behind. I think there'll be a 4 or 5 seed moving forward. As fun as this team was, and they were a ton of fun to watch, we had like 6 guys that could play. And it shocked the hell out of me, because at the beginning of the year, I thought there were a lot more guys that could play on this team. Obviously, there was a gross miscalculation with the Kevin Love situation, because they felt like Dean Wade could fill those shoes. And then at the end of the year, he's pulling splinters out of his ass because he's sitting on the bench. So they need to get more depth. They need to get more wing heavy. We're already fighting an uphill battle with starting a smallish front court. So defensively, guys are going to bully them. So there has to be changes, because if not, then you could be in a 50-win team, but the goal isn't to win 50 games.
Right.
The goal is to win all those games in the playoffs. And by the way, when you mentioned Philadelphia and Atlanta, they got their issues.
Yeah.
They got a ton of issues, both those teams. One of them just had the MVP, and they freaking are infighting and getting rid of their coach. And
yep.
Who knows if that stuff's going to work?
That's true, and they choked. They choked too. Chris, thank you for joining us. We appreciate the time, man. We'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate it, Chris.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
All right, Chris Rose, he's the best. He loves his Cleveland teams, man.
Yeah.
He's like, passionate about it.
You know, like you said, Bull, it's crazy that, you know, you go away. He's been doing national stuff for years, and he still keeps in contact.
Yeah, I mean, he's locked in all the time.
Yeah, he's
a diehard. There's no doubt about it. Mikey?
Yeah, I got one thing I want to read before we do a final takes. I got sent this on Twitter the other day of 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs, because he's been tragic.
One of our
so
fans
far.
Sent – we won't say who it is. But
yeah, one of our fans sent us this. They asked to be nameless. So this was from a fan. I'm going to read these. Some are pretty funny. I don't understand all of them, I'll be completely honest.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you guys will. So with that, are you ready?
Yes. This is, again, the top – go give me again.
These are fan-submitted top 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs.
Okay. From one fan. Came up with a top 12 list.
Number 12. Pursue eBay and bid on the very first Johnny Bench batter-up machine he sees.
Okay. Is eBay still alive?
Yeah. eBay's still out there.
Yeah.
It's still alive.
He could do that. That's true. It'd be a good career choice for him. Okay.
Number 11. Of our fan-submitted top 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs, rub dirt on his thigh so chicks at the bar thinks he actually contributed to the game.
Hey, yo. Hey, because we know everybody. We've been played with one person who has always done that. You're like, what you down there warming the pitchers up for? Getting dirty. What you doing rubbing that dirt
bullpen
on your
bullpen catcher.
10's political, so we're going to skip 10. We're going to go to 9 of our fans.
Oh, come on.
Nope, not going to go there. Number 9 on the top 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs. Toss on the mask and chest protector, grab a really light bat, and play the look at me, I'm fencing gag for the rookies.
Okay, like if you get a
that little, one didn't hit for me.
If you get a T-ball, you could have said T-ball bat.
He's fencing.
I'm not feeling that one.
This guy.
Number 8 on our fan submitted 12 yeah. things Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs. Fly back to Tampa, catch a ride to Tropicana Field, buy a Rays game program, and stare in awe at Christian Bethencourt's stats.
Okay.
All right.
Number 7 on our fan submitted top 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs. Slide a whoopee cushion onto Terry Francona's chair, then hide behind the Gatorade cooler and wait for hilarity to ensue.
I like that one.
Bull seems like a whoopee cushion.
Like would Tito get mad at that? Like,
I think
you play along with it.
My son's birthday party, we played one of the games we played was musical chairs with whoopee cushions.
That's actually kind of
that's
funny, kind of right?
Super funny.
Yeah, that's funny.
All right, number 6 on our fan submitted top 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs: stand behind the dugout air conditioner and grunt, "Luke, I am your father." Into the back of the
that's a good one.
That's good. I like that one.
Number 5 on our fan submitted top 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs: crack up the Latino players by learning how to say, "You know, if this were bowling, 3 strikes would be good" in Spanish.
Nah, not feeling that one. I'm sorry.
Number 4 on our fan-submitted top 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs: prank call the nearest Subway location and demand that Steph Curry make his meatball sandwich.
Well, I would laugh at that. Like, if I got the call.
Like, I had to think about that one for a while.
This dude just pranked me. Like,
Steph Curry does Subway.
Yeah, like, yo.
That's good.
I like that one.
Also, I'm reading the name of the category, just so in case anyone clips this, they know exactly what it is. So number 3 on our fan submitted top 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs list: instead of batting, play the "I bet you can't name another catcher below me" alphabetically game with young Guardians fans in attendance.
That's a dope one.
Number 2 on our top 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseballs submitted by our fans: draw mustaches and alien antennas on pictures of Bo Naylor in the newspaper.
That's funny.
That's a good one.
And number 1 on our top 12 things Cleveland Guardians catcher Mike Zunino can do instead of hitting baseball, submitted to us by our UCSS fans. Commission a plane to fly by that says, "I'm only hitting 170, and you still like me more than Baker Mayfield."
There it is. Hey, that went in on top.
That fan knew how to get to me.
A targeted number 1.
That was good.
Thank you to the fan out there for the submission. Pretty good.
Overall, very good.
2 or 3 in there, I was like, but most of the, we laughed at more than half of them.
12's a lot, too. People realize that's a lot.
The Steph Curry meatball sub, like, that's
– I give that.
Yeah, I like that too.
A quality A minus, right there.
Yeah,
I mean, that was good. I think that was an excellent job overall.
Yes, good job. If you guys have stuff like that, and we have a few minutes, we'll try to sneak it in. It worked out. Chris Rose had a dip at 12:55. Had a few minutes. Overtime, by the way.
Yeah, what
a little
are we doing?
Tease. This is a good one.
Mm.
We saw the clips from Watson earlier. We're going to show you guys the Browns golf games, and we have our golf expert on the panel today. The one and only Tyvis Powell here, and he's going to break down some of the Cleveland Browns golf swings in a way that no one else can.
First of all, I want everybody to know that, although I threw the club, my swing was okay, actually. I had
it
some
all goes out the window once the club leaves. Even I've never won the club out of my hand.
Listen.
And I'm the worst golfer of all time.
It happens, man. I dropped my boy Cardale off. Cardale went to the place where I did this at today.
Oh, really?
And I told him, "Yep, if you go out there the whole 8 and look in that lake, it's probably still
trying
in there."
To find my club.
Well, it wasn't my club. It was somebody else's club.
Do we have how much time we got?
10 seconds.
Oh, we got no more. All right, we'll see you on overtime coming up.
Overtime.